Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be getting into a discussion, around beyond funding. You know, what are some of the new approaches that South Africa's small business people can actually be taking advantage of, for success? There's always a lot to unpack, but for today specifically, something gives me a feeling that we're going to be mentioning the word sustainability quite a bit and getting a sense of what's going on, because in studio I am joined by Maluta Nachaolo, who is the lead green economy portfolio manager over at Nedbank CSI. Maluta, how are you?
Good afternoon. How are you? I'm fine, thanks. And you?
So Maluta is not a stranger to the platform. You were actually on the podcast about 3 months ago, I believe.
Yeah.
On that day, we were talking to you with the team from Fetola, and you guys had actually come out, with a partnership. You know, it wasn't yourselves and just Fetola. There were a number of stakeholders, on that particular project. But for today specifically, we're just talking to you. Keen to get a sense, because I'm not realizing that the last time that we spoke to you, we didn't actually get into, when we talk about green economy portfolio manager, right? Mm-hmm. What are we actually talking about? And I say that because almost on a weekly basis, we're talking to different fund managers on this platform.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that will sit and talk to us about equities. Other guys are talking to us about fixed income.
Yeah.
Other guys will, maybe talk to us about ETFs. But when we talk about green portfolio manager, what are we actually saying, first of all?
Yeah, thanks for that. It's almost difficult to, to articulate it properly because there's too many components to it. But essentially, I operate within the Nedbank Group CSI unit division.
Yeah.
That's where we use, grant funding and concessionary funding, to really support SMMEs. In this space, green SMEs. Mm. So my job essentially is about, it's on the portfolio development side of things.
Yeah.
Where I go out, conferences and, social media and in the landscape to find, strategic partners that we can invest into. Because the way we are set up, we're an NPO ourselves.
Mm.
So we can only work with other NPOs, like Fetola, for example.
Yeah.
Fetola is a partner in my portfolio or implementation partner. So we fund through them to get to the SMEs.
Mm.
And then we also use them because they've got the expertise, they've got the track record, they've got the footprint for them to be able to do the work that we need them to do as per the mandate, which is wealth creation through entrepreneurship and sustainable livelihoods through in terms of job creation. So that's what my job is all about. I go out, look for exciting things that fall within our focus area, which is agriculture, energy, water, as well as waste.
So all right.
That's pretty much what I do.
One of the things I want to get a little bit deeper on for today, based on our last conversation, but for today specifically, is around SMEs themselves in South Africa. There's a lot that is affecting these people.
Yeah.
Right. Are SMEs caring about being green in the current environment, or do they already have so many things to worry about? Right. That because when we talk about green business, there are many different angles. Right. Some people incorporate green into their operations, whereas others are green from the start.
Yeah.
They are attacking a particular, a particular issue. In your case, you're talking about the fact that you're focusing on agriculture, water, that type of thing. So are you guys targeting businesses that are necessarily looking to have a positive impact, or is it just the fact that a business is operating in agriculture, water, or one of the areas we've just spoken about, surely there's a way that we can push a sustainability agenda from what someone is doing. Just keen to get a sense of that piece.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. we take it from different perspectives.
Yeah.
You need to have a very open mind when you're doing this job. Otherwise, you can be open, you operate like a robot, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to look for a business that is just in agriculture. Then that's farming. In water, that's someone that's maybe doing borehole or last mile delivery in terms of filtering water and offering that or selling that to the community, or waste pickers, or energy guys that are doing solar panels. But in terms of entrepreneurs, they go through a lot. Some is personal issues, you know, themselves, to work on themselves as business people, separating themselves from the business and being professional, you know, all that stuff. And some is more like external factors. Now there's things around droughts. There's things around strikes. There's things, all those things. And then there's the technical side of things that they need to know what exactly what they're doing. And then they've got like challenges of course, about markets and funding and the usual stuff. But I think we're at a point where these days, any business, for it to be resilient, basically, you're gonna have to adopt innovation to be efficient, to be resilient. For example, if we're talking what we're going through now with water, you know, in Joburg, for you to,
I've heard that water throttling is now a thing.
It's a thing. Throttling between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m. So we must bath before that. So if you're in the, let's say you are, what type of business can I say? Let's say you're a water business. You are, I don't know how to put it, but you're a business that needs to operate full on. Okay. A salon. Let's take a salon, a classic case. You're a salon. You need water to be able to wash people's hair and all that. But if there's no water, what are you going to do?
It's tough.
Not going to operational.
Yeah, yeah.
Where are people going to go? They're going to go where there's water. So what would be your strategy? Would be to invest in some tanks, you know, harvest water and then pumps and all those things, so that when there's no water, then you can operate.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking energy and it's like a filling station, like energy, this is very required there to pump for the convenience stores in terms of the fridges and the ovens and all those things, the coffee machines and whatever. If there's no power, people are going to go next door or somewhere else. Then you're losing business. So what do? You have to install these solutions so that you remain productive. Productivity equals clients. Clients equals, you know, revenue, and revenue equals, you know, profitability, and then you, as you grow, you're creating jobs, you're assisting the community, et cetera, et cetera. So we're finding that all these businesses, irrespective of them not being clearly into these specific sectors that we're focusing on, we also look at fashion. Guys in fashion, when you're talking about sustainability there, in the fashion space, it's about being able to use, you know, intercept. So when, like, for example, let's say furniture manufacturers or car manufacturers, the waste that comes from there, of cards and whatever, or stuff that hasn't been used, or corporates that have got corporate wear and the fabrics are not being used, or there's some uniform that has not been used. So that's an opportunity for fashion designers and those guys to use that instead of going to textile manufacturers and then using virgin material, which then, because where does it come from? From farmers, wool and all that stuff, which also has, you know, ramifications when it comes to the environment. So we look at it very open-minded to say that what's going to assist the environment, but while also going to assist the businesses themselves to be resilient, to be profitable, to be productive, and.
Let's go deeper into the examples that you're talking about, you know, whether I'm a salon or whether I'm any other type of business that is using, you know, one of these inputs. I'm a fashion business. There's a lot of waste that's coming from my process. I'm in the hair care business, but, you know, I'm struggling with having that constant supply. I need, to your point, maybe I need systems that have, you know, backup water, all of this stuff. Whatever it is, the examples that you've just given, you, under your leadership, the bank, you know, through your unit has, you know, invested over 100 million rand into, you know, 300 businesses from what I know, if not more.
Yeah.
Right. What form is this, investment taking? Right. Yeah. Are you giving, let's say I am Modiwa Enterprises and I am bottling, you know, drinking water.
Yeah.
For example, what are you giving me? Is it, funding, you know, to, is it funding to put together, to invest in some of these backup things? Is it, is it debt?
Yeah.
Is it, a whole business plan to say, oh, well, his whole business is centered around, being green anyway, so we'll just fund the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or you look at a portion of my business and say, there's potential that, you know, there's an investment, a green investment that can be made. Yeah, we'll fund that portion of that. How, walk us through some of those mechanics.
Yeah, I think the approach we take, because we are very much grassroots, we start start from ideas.
Yeah.
Some of you had, like, you have a dream that, oh, you know, I've got something. I mean, there's a spring in your, I don't know, community, and you feel like I can be the next big water, you know, supplier, right? But you don't know how to go about it. So you can approach, for example, any of our partners, Fetula, Indalo, Cosini, whoever, and then you can say, I want to do this, and they can help you from that, from ideation, look through the whole design thinking, you know, approach, right? To assist you with that. First, we fund capacity building in terms of the skills you need to become a successful business person, personal development, business development, technical development, you know, all these things that you require. And then as and when you need funding, capital injection, you know, along the SME life cycle journey, you know, from startup to growth stage to established to scaling, you then will inject the funding that you require. Initially, it might be just 50,000 rand that you need. Maybe you need to buy, for example, a filter. Maybe it's a 50,000 rand filter that you can then start to, you know, filter the water. Maybe you might need to buy bottles or something that bottles automatically. And then you might need a truck. And then you might need something else, you know, a building. As things change, then we are able to supply you. So we provide you, like, it's almost like a holistic offering. But it's not evergreen. Excuse the pun. We're not going to find you wire. It's not going to happen. Yeah. At some point, you're going to have to graduate. You have to exit. Like, we've got a time. The moment you start... We start talking and you start becoming part of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
We're timing you.
What? I'm really glad that, you know, you're bringing that up, because I've done quite a bit of work in the philanthropy space.
Yeah.
And that tends to be one of the biggest sticking points as well, because you fund a project and sometimes it's unclear whether people need to return back funding. In a lot of cases, it's open-ended and, you know, you don't have to give money back.
Yeah.
Or even if there is an agreement to return the funding back, the mechanisms in place to either collect and all of that stuff are...
Non-existent. Yeah.
We also see the same with government initiatives as well.
Mm.
But with a lot of government initiatives, you just get the money and no one ever comes back to check.
Sure.
You're right. So I'm glad that with you guys, sitting there and say, hey, have you... Yeah.
I mean, I think you cannot... You need to blame all parties involved. You blame the funder. You know, the grant maker, and then also you can also blame the entrepreneur. Mm. You can also blame the enterprise support organizations.
Mm.
I think we're at a space where guys like to be seen, you know, social media and all those things. People like to take pictures, like to post it, you know, they like to celebrate, to pose as doing good, mm. right? And sometimes they overdo it. They could be doing good, but sometimes we create a culture of dependency. You know, you're finding someone, yes, in the beginning, it's the right thing to do. But as time goes, if you're really about impact, you know, you will be monitoring this person as they progress and also their behaviors in terms of true entrepreneurship, in terms of them, you know, how do you say, starting to accumulate assets, equity, them starting to, their income statement starting to look good. They're starting to make, you know, profits and all that stuff, you know, paying their taxes. And then, you know, so it goes. At some point, you need to be quite close to it to understand that some people, they will reach a point where they need to graduate from that because their financials and their cash flow and their bank statements shows that they shouldn't be receiving this anymore. They need to go to other types of funding, concessionary funding, commercial funding, because the opportunity cost is that now you're not going to have money for, you know, new pipeline.
Mm.
Those are young people. Those are new ideas. And because when you this is now your life, you're funding this one project, this one entrepreneur, because that entrepreneur makes you look good.
Mm.
That entrepreneur also, it doesn't know anything else other than you giving them money.
Mm.
No one's going to come, oh, I don't want this money anymore.
Mm.
They're going to want it until such time you close the tap, you know, and then they have to go elsewhere. So it's all about when you're starting the journey with them, that needs to be stated in the beginning that we're going to receive funding and then we put in there an exit clause.
Mm.
At what point are we going to effect that for you to know? But also it's about how do we prepare you for that to become investor ready, lender ready, bankability, like bankable and all those things, which is something that I feel the ecosystem itself is not really doing because there is money to be made. When you've got, you sort of funding the same people, it's all about the numbers game and sometimes people are lazy to go look for new talent in terms of new entrepreneurs that could be in Lusikisiki or Matatiel or somewhere in Umlazi. So it's people do what's easy. So we need to sort of keep them accountable, basically.
As you're talking, there's two things that, there are two parallels that are coming to my mind that I think of. When I first started in this job, one of the first analyses I ever wrote about in the Financial Mail was the fact that what people consider business development support was a 20 billion rand economy unto itself. Mm. Incubators, accelerators, all of these institutions that are going around saying, come. Yeah. We can help you to grow your business, all of that stuff. And that the money was going mainly to your consultants and to the accelerators themselves, and very little of it actually filters down to the actual, you know, businesses, to the actual businesses themselves. That's one idea. Mm. The second idea is around the fact that when you are going about trying to solve, what's the word I'm looking for? When you in the VC space now, you tend to see that a lot of the same businesses are the ones that are getting a lot of attention.
Yes.
And they're the ones that attract the most investment, the most investment appetite.
Yeah.
You know, you hear that this company, you know, has just gotten funding from this person, right?
Yeah.
And I can't help but to draw parallels from those two things with exactly what you're saying now, where, you know, it almost feels as if people aren't willing to put in the work to go find, you know, these gems, you know, to do the work there. Following on from that specific point, my quick maths in my head, you correct me if I'm wrong, but if you guys have funded 300 businesses at 100 million, that's an average ticket size of maybe 330,000 rand, right? Which for more mature businesses in the private sector doesn't seem like a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not, yeah.
But maybe you could help us to contextualize this discussion by maybe giving us a sense of how far 300,000 goes for, you know, this portion of people that you guys have gone out to look for. Because for a certain segment of the population, that 300,000 as a small business owner is life-changing.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, as I said, I think for us, because we were working with like small enterprises.
Yes.
Like very, very small, like from ideas.
Mm.
And our strategy in terms of the green economy is still new, 3 years old now. So there are enterprises that we've been funding for that have remained with us for that long. And they've been growing from the 50,000 to 100,000 to like 300,000 injection, capital injection from ourselves. And they are now making maybe 1 million rand or 2 million rand turnover, right? So the way we go about it, obviously, we've got partners, for example, that are, let's say, in water. In water, let's say Kusini Water, for example, which you might know through Morendeni Mafumo, the CEO there, where the mandate there is to train young people, unemployed people, to understand, you know, water, you know, the issues around water, the issues around access to clean drinking water, and then understand the business of water and the technology used there. And then once those guys have been trained, then we are able to sort of set them up with water kiosks. It costs about maybe 100,000-120,000 rand to set it up, like with our grant money. And then those guys, they're able to make about, let's say, 30,000 rand a month. And they've got, they're able to make a profit of about, let's say, 12,000 rand. So the profit margin is quite good. And they're also able to employ about another two people.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good.
And we've set up about, last year we did 40, this year we do another 40. And there's a bunch of them in Hammanskraal. And during the COVID, we also intervened there to make sure that we with a testing solution to make sure that the water is always clean and all that. But if you look at Kusini Water, the impact, the investment is not that much, maybe including training, let's say 150, somewhere there. But in terms of the impact, that income that they make, that one investment, and then the monthly income of 30,000 rand, and the number of jobs that you're able to bring in. And over time, that business continues to operate even post our investment. And that person is also able to use the money to invest back, buy a bigger filter, expand or set up another kiosk in another place. So those are the types of business. Small, you know, big ideas, but then in terms of impact, it's quite big. And we also do the same in energy, where we train young people and then into solar, and then we place them into solar companies. But the solar industry is not doing so well, you know, with Eskom. But we're finding ways to do other things, you know, to be innovative in this space. But we're doing, I mean, we've got a lady, man, in Harankua, you know, like with the unemployed. She had become, she did nursing, she did theology, you know, but still it didn't work out. But now she ended up wanting, like, opening a spaza shop, like quarter, you know, fish and chips and all that. But she had a problem, you know, when she had to dispose of the oil, because you only can only use it a number of times.
Yeah.
Right. So now she started to do research. What can I do with this oil? You know, and then she went on Google, and then she found out, oh, actually, I can do a number of things, but the one she's cycled on was, oh, I can make soap, detergent, and all those things. She did that. So she reached out to one of our partners, Indalo, you know, the one we launched the NetBank Indalo Fund with. And they helped her, you know, like just to conceptualize the whole thing, like do prototype some of the things in terms of what can happen, help in terms of approval with, you know, the regulators, and helped her to get a scale, you know, to weigh the oil and whatever, and get drums because you need to filtering using water. Now she went from making 30,000 rand. Now she's making over a million rand.
Nice.
She's in macro.
Nice.
She's in cash and carry. She's also created an ecosystem where she's now buying the way people used to discard the oil into the ground, contaminating the soil or into the drains and clogging the system. Now people, they are selling it to her, 6 rand a liter. And then she's got people she's created employment for people that go and buy from those communities and come to sell to her. So it's a whole ecosystem. Now look where else. And we haven't invested that much. We probably have invested about, I think it was about 50 in the beginning and maybe 150 in total. And
you know,
so these are things that we're not inviting that much, but the impact of it is now big. It's quite big.
You know, if you guys were in venture capital, you'd be doing well.
Yeah, it's the future. I mean, let's see how things go. But I'm sure we'll do. Okay. Again, the other thing, the thing that you mentioned about people like VCs and everyone, people like to jump onto things like these bandwagon
waves
or stuff.
Yeah.
Look what happened with, vertical farming, like globally. Like big vertical farms, they shut down Infarm and all these other guys. They shut down because people, they look at this, oh, it's fancy, it's going to solve food security, high tech, and all the, without understanding the fundamentals. That thing is, it's very expensive, high capital, you know, it takes a few years to break even. And then you need to manage it at a plant level and at a unit level in terms of electricity, water, nutrients, everything. And if you don't have the expertise to do that, you know, and the patience, you know, to make sure that you stay the course, things fail, you know. So that's the thing with when it comes to VCs. They look at this thing, they're like, oh, everyone is there. Let's go there. That's where the money is. They don't sort of invest the time to go look for new stuff. And new stuff is always there. You heard of a boy in Limpopo that did this car, hydrogen car. You know, it was in the news. But no one really cares because it's a boy in Limpopo. And, you know, instead of investing money and everything into that child so that you can start to bring in this tech and all these things to develop these things. But people will go to what's already been invested. They don't want to take a chance on such things, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a very real problem, like what you said. The fact that people jump onto waves and would probably be best served with people actually paying attention to what's going on and investing in the ideas. Because one of the things that strikes me about the examples that you gave, like you said, is the high impact, right? The fact that I was even just quickly doing a quick amortization in my head of the first business that you spoke about, to say, if you've given 150 and these guys are able to make an income of 30,000
average,
a month average, just on that basis, you know, you could pay back your entire loan in 6 months. Obviously, you then have to factor in, you know, costs and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very possible that they would be able to, one, pay back their money quite quickly.
Yeah.
But secondly, the fact that from an operational point of view, you know, depending on the timeline that, you know, yourselves would have given them, right? They're already quite profitable, you know. If you've given them, let's say, 2 years to pay something like that back, at 30,000 a month, you're already quite profitable because ahead of your ability to pay back.
Yeah.
But you're employing people, and then there's the example of, you know, this lady. She sounds very, very impressive with the spaza shop and the ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah.
And it reminds me of, I always tell this story because it struck me. Took a trip to Umlazi with one of the fintech companies, looking at some of the developments. Went to this one lady spaza shop. It didn't look like anything out of the ordinary. Normal spaza shop, the red containers that we're used to. This lady was making 300,000 rand a month just from this one spaza shop in the middle of Mlazi.
Yeah.
So you then realize that there's a lot of money that is ticking around in a lot of these businesses that people aren't necessarily paying attention to.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to just touch on, and maybe this is something that you guys probably grapple with. Like I said, I've done quite a bit of work in the philanthropy space.
Yeah.
But also I remember when I went to business school, I went to Rhodes.
Yeah.
And Rhodes was big on sustainability. The motto for Rhodes University is where leaders learn.
Mm.
But for Rhodes Business School, it's leadership for sustainability.
Okay.
So even back then,
yeah,
we were talking about people, planet, profit, and we're baking in sustainability in everything we're doing. When I look at it now, I think these guys were ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
But one of the big conversations we had back then was social enterprise.
Yeah.
And today, one of the big debates in the philanthropy space is how do we make NGOs more sustainable? Because a lot of the time you give a grant or you give funding to a particular project.
Yeah.
Once that project funding is done, then the whole structure collapses.
Mm.
But how do you put in models?
Yeah.
To make sure that these things continue to operate even outside of the grants that have been given to them. And it feels like you guys have been able to do that part where you're making people understand that, listen, this is entrepreneurship.
Mm.
This is not necessarily a grant. This is funding. You need to put a business model so that when we stop funding, you continue to run.
Yeah.
And you even continue to grow, you know, beyond all of that. So maybe you could just talk to us as we end off about that importance of communicating and putting in.
I think obviously, like I said, the ecosystem itself and the, let me say, the SME life cycle journey, right? You need to understand. And where is the gaps in terms of the inefficiencies of the system? So I remember last year I did a short course, UCT Business School. It was called, I think it was done through Bertha Center, called Impact Investing in Africa. Very interesting thing. But obviously I had my own, you know, perceptions of what is impact investor was all about. And obviously, I'm an impact investor because, you know, that's what I thought. You think that because we're giving out money and people, but obviously it's about, you know, there must be social return and financial return. But what I took out of there was on the innovation side of things, talking about different funding models, you know, blended finance and other types of funding. But what happened after that and why I went for that course? Well, I was thinking about what can we do different to solve for these ecosystem challenges and make sure that we're not always providing grant funding, because then we, at some point, we become part of the problem. And there was a thing around recoverable grants or convertible funds, loans or grants, whatever you called it. And then I was like, this is interesting, because if what we do with our partners, we fund them a grant fund, you know, for a full program, it says 10 million or 20 million, whatever. And then portion of it is on that business development support.
Mm.
Part of it is on the funding for, you know, for the business, investment to the business. And then there's then the monitoring evaluation, and then there's their management fee, right? Mm. What they get, usually around 15%. And the thing is that the problem is that it's every year. Mm. So after the term ends, let's say 12 months or 18 months, usually max is usually 18 months.
Yeah.
They come back, or we need more money to do the same thing or to invest, go to the next phase with the same entrepreneur. Maybe they might have sort of filtered it down to maybe if it was 20, maybe to 10 or 15, then you fund them and then they grow. But that model itself, it works at some point, but I think in terms of the future of philanthropy, or not even, we don't even call ourselves philanthropists, more investors, right? You want this thing to be self-sustainable. That's what we, when we developed the Nedbank Indalo Fund, for example, we're thinking, there's things that we should be doing ourselves, investing to these entrepreneurs ourselves with loans. But concessionary loans and all those things, but we can't, right? So what can we do? Okay, we can use our partners. So we're like, okay, we're going to fund you we're going to Indalo. We say approach Indalo. Indalo, let's look into a way in terms of we can help these guys so that they can become like between growth stage and, you know, established.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gap there where these guys maybe the turnover and the repayment ability and, you know, and also the whole jokey thing in terms of personal development. It's not there yet, mm-hmm. but we want to bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay, let's do a, like, let's say, call it concessionary lending, but we're going to fund you, you know, with a grant fund. But when it gets to you, it converts into a loan
mm-hmm.
that you then, you can fund entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
That way, and then obviously there will be like a fund management fee mm-hmm. for you too, because now it's a new thing. It's different from getting money, it goes. It's an easy thing because you don't, there's no admin to mm-hmm. go and collect and call, hey, you know, and have a schedule and a system.
Mm-hmm.
So now obviously you need to have that fund management thing that to properly structure them. So they've got a fund manager and then support and systems and process and contracts. So there's that. And then there's the fund itself goes maximum 500,000 to the entrepreneurs, you know, that then use that money to grow their businesses. But they know now it's not a grant. It needs mm-hmm. to come back. But the way it sort of become interesting is that if when they outperform their KPIs, let's take jobs, for example, we're gonna fund you. And then the KPIs that is on the social side, economic side, is that you're going to create, say, 10 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back and say, oh, I've actually created 15 or 20. Then because you've created so much value into the system, you have empowered the community, then we thought it would be quite nice to reward, to incentivize that person.
Yeah.
Then we're able to convert a portion, let's say 20 or 25% mm-hmm. of that loan
mm-hmm.
into a grant,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that way sort of incentivizes that guys, you know, rewards them for being, you know, an ambassador, for being a, you know, an impact entrepreneur and all those things. So that's what we've done with the InnetBank Indalo Fund. But obviously, some of it, for those that don't, you know, reach those, outperform those things, is still a loan. It needs to come back. And then we need to sort of repeat and loan to other entrepreneurs. So we are able to reach more people with the same amount of funding. Obviously, it will wind down. As time goes, it will wind down after maybe 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And then we need to do it again. But at some point, we might start to introduce interest rates and all those things. Then it will definitely last even longer. So that's what we're doing now. And then after that, obviously, we then have to sort of go into the commercial side of things. Say, hey, guys, this is the pipeline we have been working on. This is what the data is saying. This is, you know, how they've been able to perform. If they're able to do this, obviously, there will be like some sort of a jump from a 0% to whatever. But as an entrepreneur, they should understand that, you know, they need to reach a point. That's the hope and the challenge at this point, that the guys need to mature enough to a point where they understand that to grow and rapidly so, you know, at the pace at which they want, not dictated by the grant funding, they need to tap into commercial funding.
Yes.
Commercial debt, mezzanine,
all of
private
that,
equity, all that stuff. That's why if you're going to be a yoko and all these guys, you're not going to do that based on grant funding.
No.
Because you're going to spend so much time in workshops.
Yes.
Going to spend so much time reporting.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's stifling the growth of our SMEs.
Mm.
Because they're looking at this 50,000, but they only get it at the end. They need to go through all these things.
All these steps, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been great just getting a sense of what's going on in the green economy and some of the aspects around funding businesses with an agenda of sustainability around it. Great to get practical examples of how, you know, Nedbank is actually sitting there and deciding, you know, how they fund some of these very small businesses, you know, to actually do well in areas such as agriculture, such as water, and actually instilling that sense of having a proper business model around what you do, as opposed to taking things as grants that, you know, you may or may not have to, you know, pay back money for. And I like the point that Maluta makes at the end there, where he's talking about the fact that it's in the best interests of all parties that these businesses grow as fast as possible, you know, because for an investor such as Nedbank, you're making your money back, you know, quickly, and then you can then reallocate it somewhere else and obviously continue to show the value of the model that's in place. But for the business owner, the faster that you can get out of this cycle, the faster that you can get out of this cycle that is there, then the faster that you can actually start tapping into commercial, you know, types of funding and other types of funding that don't necessarily have some of the restrictions that, you know, that he's talking about. And the fact that it does come with a little bit more freedom. Mm-hmm. And in certain cases, you are actually able to tap into even larger pools of capital for you to be able to grow and scale, you know, your particular operation. And one of the other things that I found that was interesting, especially the lady who has created an ecosystem, is how you take one particular business and from the various activities in that business find a way to create an ecosystem. Someone had a spaza shop, and in that spaza shop they were making fish, is it, you said fish and chips, and just the oil, you know, from that, you know, from that operation has turned into a business unto itself. And, you know, this lady is now making over R1 million from the ecosystem that started off with one spaza shop. And there's so many things you can think about that, right? You're finding a way to reduce waste, you know, which feeds into the green agenda. But in doing so, someone has found a very profitable way, you know, to operate and then fund, you know, other aspects of their business. So that's been great. Thank you so much. We were in conversation with Maluta and Nechaulu, who is the lead green economy portfolio manager for corporate social investment at Nedbank. Maluta, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.